These are pending questions. Thank you. Oh. So we'll have to extend this seminar up to next Gaupurnima. We can all stay here all the year. Actually, that's what we should all do. The only reason not to stay in Mayapur is because we have to preach in other places to tell other people to come to Mayapur. Otherwise, what business do we have in this material world anyway? Volume is too high? This is part of modern Indian culture that everything is too loud. Actually, it's not only modern Indian culture, but it's part of traditional Indian culture. Everything should be very loud. Just like you see in the weddings, or they have the drums and the shanai, it's in the temples. It seems that the spiritual world is quite loud, as is reflected in Indian culture. Very honored to be in the presence of many great personalities in this room, many devotees engaged in the preaching mission. Especially, I have to offer my respects to Anandamayi Prabhu, our very dear God brother, who's been in ISKCON Hyderabad since 1971. And if you know the history of ISKCON Hyderabad, then you'll clap more loudly. Been steadily working at the printing Prabhupada's books in Telugu for the last, I don't know how many years, maybe 20 years or something like that, isn't it? Also, Vijay Prabhu is famous for distributing and nowadays also inspiring others to distribute Prabhupada's books. He's been distributing books in America since about the same as long as anyone can remember, and is now traveling around the world inspiring others to do so also. You can come and sit here. There's a little space up here if you want. All right, so here are questions from yesterday. Oh. Despite the fact that one knows that 50% of the stomach is to be filled with foodstuff, 25% water, 25% air, why does one eat 85 to 90% leading to, I can't read what it says exactly, but you know, we all know what it leads to. Because as one starts eating, one keeps on eating, which results in overeating. Why do we do it? Well, you can ask yourself. There's a clue in the prayer we sing. Lobha jiba lobha moi shudurmati. The tongue is, or the sense of that is connected to the tongue is full of greed and very bad. Why do we eat more? Well, if we remember that we're only eating to maintain the body, to serve Krishna nicely, then we might be able to control the tongue. I have a continuous problem. I feel strong in my sadhana, sambandha, and seva for 15 to 20 days, and then I'm very low in them for 15 days. Then again, by mercy of Guru and Krishna, I become strong for 20 days. Then I am again weak for 15 to 20 days. The continuous problem since last 1.5 years. What is the reason? Offenses or previous karmas, misuse of independence or any other reasons? There may be many different reasons. This is described in by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his Madhurja Kadambani. This is a syndrome of becoming strong and then feeling weak. But anyway, we just have to keep on going. Pray for strength and gradually we'll get it. Some suggested reasons that have been given: offenses, previous karma, misuse of independence. There may be so many different reasons, but we should have the faith that bhakti, the process of bhakti, invokes the mercy of Krishna and the Vaishnavas, and we will get strength to overcome all difficulties if we stick to the process. There are many such questions about how to improve our bhakti, how to maintain strength, how to become stronger. One very good answer is to just keep on going with the process. And in due course of time, we should have the faith that in due course of time, if we're sincere to stick to the process, that Krishna will help us. Another thing is that we shouldn't base our... Here it's saying, I feel strong and then I feel weak, but we shouldn't base our devotional service just on how we feel. We have to perform our duty in Krishna consciousness, whatever. Just like you may feel, today I feel like chanting my rounds right now, I feel like getting up and going to Mangaladi, I feel like going out for preaching, and another time you may not feel like it, but we can't base on our devotional service on what we feel like, otherwise we'll end up not doing it, because Maya will induce us to not feel like doing it. That is her. She has two phases, Maya, the avaranatmika vritti and prakshepatmika vritti. That generally we're covered by Maya, and when we try to come out of Maya, then she goes into overdrive to push us back. So we have to stick to the process, whether we feel like it or not. And by doing that, the process of bhakti yoga brings us into contact with that which purifies us, the holy name, the hearing of the satang prasangam mama virya sangvido, with hearing about Krishna, with the association of devotion. These are all very purifying factors. So by following the process of devotional service, it brings us into contact which is with that which is for our benefit. So we should have the faith that if we just stick to this, that Krishna will help us. My lifetime clarification is, what is Ritvik? Did Prabhupada pass a resolution about Ritvik? What is the difference between Ritvik temple and other ISKCON? This is a very big one. There is a theory, I'll try and say this briefly, it's quite a big topic, as many of these topics are big topics. There is a theory, of course those who are Ritvikvadis, or those who have subscribed to this theory, they will insist, and probably punch you in the face if you don't agree, that it's not a theory, but it is a fact. They won't punch you in the face, but they tend to argue quite fanatically. They'll point and say, Prabhupada said this, without understanding the process of understanding spiritual knowledge. Just like that question, can Guru Sadhu Shastra? This is a very good example. What does... We have to follow... The center is Shastra. We receive Shastric knowledge through the Guru, and the check and balance system is we see what have the previous acharyas also said. The Guru doesn't just take from Shastra and interpret it according to his own understanding, but gives understanding based on that which he has received from previous acharyas. So there is a theory that Prabhupada didn't want anyone to initiate after he departed this world, and that he only wanted that there would be that he would continue to initiate after his departure through others who would act as Ritviks, or which you can say they're like officiating priests in an initiation ceremony. This theory has gained some popularity. It would appear largely because quite a few of those who were initiating fell away from their position. It was considered that Prabhupada couldn't have made the mistake of having people who are less than perfect act as gurus. So this has come up, and there's purported evidence. It's quite a big thing. Purported evidence that, I think it's based on some statement that Prabhupada said, "I will, when I say, then you should act as gurus." And then it's never seen afterwards that Prabhupada gave the direct order that you in particular should act as guru. So it's based on something said, Prabhupada said in a conversation, taken out of the context of all of his other teachings and that of all the Shastras and all of the Parampara, Acharya's teachings. So this is the theory, that it's something like mainstream Sikhism. That there's in Sikhism, there's no guru after Guru Gobind Singh, and you just worship the Granth, the book, and that's all. Or in Bengal, they have this Aurobindo. They also have the Ritvik system. So this is the theory. Did Prabhupada pass a resolution about Ritvik? Well, Prabhupada didn't really pass resolutions about anything. GBC passes resolutions. So, no. What is the difference between a Ritvik temple and other ISKCON? Well, it's in the Ritvik temples. Are there so many? There's one in Bangalore. I don't know if there are any others. Maybe in New York they have something. What is the difference? Well, there they follow this theory that no one can be a guru. They actually tend to be quite offensive to those who don't follow their theory. They also say that there should be no books except those of Prabhupada and one other book called The Final Order by Krishnakant Desai. And that this is the book. All of Prabhupada's disciples couldn't understand Prabhupada, but Krishnakant Desai did. And if you really want to understand Prabhupada, you have to go through Krishnakant Desai. So practically he's the acharya in this case. So it's, but I don't think we'll find anyone of any developed philosophical or spiritual level who subscribes to this theory. It tends to be quite fanatical. I'll give another example of this, is that they insist we have to distribute the Bhagavad Gita according to the unrevised edition. In their eyes, Jayadvaita Maharaj is one of the biggest demons that ever appeared on this earth. In their eyes. I'm not saying that. I don't agree with that. Because he edited the Bhagavad Gita as it is. But then if you see what are the kind of things he edited, there's in one verse of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna states, Pitrinam Aryama Chasmi, among the Pitris, I am Aryama. So this was edited by Prabhupada's early disciples. They never heard of a Pitri, being American hippies at the time, or just come from that life. So when they heard this on the tape, they put, there is a planet of trees. Instead of Pitris, they put, there is a planet of trees. So they insist that the Ritvik Vadis insist that this is the way it should be. But Prabhupada didn't actually write that. And to keep that, to say that this is the real Bhagavad Gita, is actually an insult to Prabhupada, because By their foolishness, it makes Prabhupada look foolish. And this being destroyed in Bangalore, which is the headquarters of the Madhva Sampradaya, which is the most, among Vaishnavas, they're the most particular about Shastra. So, there are various foolishnesses there. It's a big subject, which I won't get into more. But basically we can find that the Ritvik Vadis tend to be quite offensive. How can one not know that he is becoming humble? How would you describe humility? We may not know if we're becoming humble, because if we think, well, I'm humble, yeah, I'm really humble, I'm the humblest of them all. If you think I'm becoming humble, then we're becoming proud. That's it. How would you describe humility? Humility means to consider that jogata bichare kichu nahi pai tomara karunasha. I have no qualification. Whatever qualification I may be perceived in me is only by the mercy of Guru and Vaishnavas. Or there are many examples. It's Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, who is such an exalted Vaishnava, we cannot imagine his level, has to have composed Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, writes that Jagai Madhai Hoite Muito Papishta Purishe Kit Hoite Muishe Logishta Jai Mora Nam Shune Tara Punna Khoi Jai Mora Nam Loi Tara Pap Hoi. He says that I am more sinful than Jagai and Madhai and lower than a worm in stool. Anyone who hears my name, their pious activities become reduced, and anyone who says my name becomes sinful. And Prabhupada explained that he's not writing that as a kind of poetic insert, that we may say, oh, I'm the most fallen, but we don't, but he really feels it. So that is the standard of humility. We can become humble by considering how great is Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, and he's feeling like this. Chunada pi sunichena, easy to say. Oh, I'm the most fallen, easy to say. If we can actually feel like that, then we can attract the mercy of Krishna. Dinere adhik daya kare bhagavan. Those who consider themselves very fallen, they can attract the mercy of Krishna. So we can at least talk about it, and we can maybe try to, we should try to develop this feeling. Maharaj, can we accept any devotee's remnants prasadam? And is there any restriction? No, there's no restriction. We can accept any devotee's prasadam. But as Prabhupada explained once, well, he was asked about, can we take the remnants of non-devotees if they leave something left over and then we may not want to throw it out. But Prabhupada said that we may not, yes, theoretically we can, but we may not be so advanced to do so. In temple management, one is highly prone to commit Vaishnava aparad. What are the principles to be kept in mind while managing so that Vaishnava aparad is avoided? Very good question. It's very difficult to manage a spiritual movement. If we're managing a business or a factory, it's relatively easy because people are working for money. And there's a contract. You work and you get the money. But in spiritual life, it's supposed to be voluntary. In some of our temples, it's been found to be easier to manage in some ways by paying the devotees. And then it's a contract, you have to work, but then the spirit is lost. The job gets done, but the spirit is not there. The purpose for which it's being done is lost. So it's voluntary, but then what's going on is that devotees are being engaged in services on the principle of voluntary service, on the principle of doing it for Krishna's pleasure. But it's the temple is set up on the principle of pure devotional service, but then we're mostly not on that platform. So then we get our material desires and coming out, and plus the human intercourse, there are so many, someone wants to do something one way and someone wants to do something another way, and it's Kali Yuga, the age of quarrel, so it's not very easy to manage, and sometimes you may try to do things forcefully. That's one way, but if then devotees may become disturbed, or he may try to do things diplomatically and they also become disturbed, or he may just neglect the whole thing and say, oh, you just all do it yourselves, and then they fight among themselves and they become disturbed. So it's difficult. And those who haven't managed temples, for them it's very easy to criticize those who have. But those who have the experience know that it's not such an easy thing to do. So what is the key? You can read some Kami management books if you like, but they may give some idea, but they don't have all the answers, that's for sure. I would say the greatest key is sincerity. If the devotees who are engaged in administrating and managing, if they're very sincere to themselves, be servants, that I'm executing this service of directing others as a service, and they themselves are not simply interested to see that the job goes on somehow or other, but they want everything to be done in a manner which is most pleasing to Guru and Krishna, Prabhupada and Krishna, then that spirit will be appreciated by those who are sincere. And those who are not sincere, those who are less sincere, well, it may be difficult. Of course, if we're sincere ourselves, then we may not be considering others less sincere so much. But this is the quality, our desire to serve, and then by that desire to serve, what often happens is that those who are leaders, they become somewhat pushy because they want, come on, do this service, do it properly, and this and that. But that pushing, Prabhupada said this is a pushing movement, that pushing comes because of our desire to serve Krishna in the best possible way. And those who are pushed in that way, they may not immediately do so, but gradually they will appreciate what is the benefit of that, and they'll appreciate that. There was one, as you may know, I'm writing a book about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. It's almost ready, by the way. That's a common question. It's a common question, when's it going to be ready? And I've been saying it's almost ready for the last few years, but actually it is now. I hope to have it printed by Janmashtami. Say Hari Bol. Well, you can say Hari Bol all the time, but that Hari Bol, when it comes, it will be useful. Anyway, I was reading the biographies of some of his disciples, and this book was written by a disciple of one Odulomi Maharaj, Sripad Odulomi Maharaj, but in one. He's god brother of Prabhupada's, and he gave Odulomi Maharaj's biography. He also gave the biography of Srila Bhakti Pradeep Tirtha Maharaj, in which he wrote that he was so strict, he wouldn't allow anyone to do anything wrong. He would immediately chastise them. And at the end of the biography, he's writing that, I pray to have his association birth after birth, may the dust of his lotus feet decorate my head. And you can see it's very emotional, very even it seemed even more than his own initiating guru, because obviously this Tirtha Maharaj had been very strict with him. He was appreciating that he trained me, he helped me so much in Krishna consciousness. So if one is actually sincere to serve Krishna, then devotees will appreciate that pressure. Prabhupada was very heavy, that's very well known. I mean, huge bodied persons like Brahmananda and a huge or very strong minded persons, Harikesh, Tamal, Krishna, Guru, Kripa, and all that. Prabhupada could just with snapping his finger, he could make them cry like a baby. So Prabhupada is very powerful. But devotees appreciated that, because he was giving Krishna. He was giving Krishna. So what's the key to management, that we won't make offenses? Then our sincerity to serve others by conveying to them or what is received ourselves. One devotee, there's one devotee I regularly hear devotees say, tell me, leader of one, oh, he's so heavy, so difficult to be. Then I see devotees are under him, they're developing, they're learning Shastra, they're becoming enlivened, they're preaching, they're fully engaged in service. And then they'll say, oh, but actually, he's very good also. And then you'll hear how it's like, one devotee is there after some program, late at night, washing all the pots. Everyone has taken rest, he's feeling fried. And then this devotee will come in and he'll wash the pots with them. Big, big leader. And then they feel, oh, yes. They're very satisfied with that. So we have to see, there's no formula. You can't, these managers, what is this? These management books, they want to give crisp little formulas about how to, the 1 minute manager and all this kind of thing. 7 habits of highly effective. They want to put it all in a little book, you read the book and okay. But actual life is not such that you can just put it all in a little book. Go to some seminar and become a perfect person. It's not like that. But our sincerity and constantly praying to Krishna, how to do everything in such a way that everyone remains enlivened. We see Prabhupada also, he was very strong, but sometimes he would also, he would be very strong and then he would see someone become disturbed and then he would call them and be very sweet with them like this, when they're on the verge of snapping. There was just some incident I'm remembering in South Africa. There's Prabhupada's disciple Bhargava, the photographer. He was always taking photographs, and Prabhupada didn't seem to like it very much, because especially this, the camera made a big clock, clock noise every time. And Prabhupada would say, "Don't take so many photos, don't take so many photos." And he would say, "Here's Prabhupada, I want to take photos." And Prabhupada was saying, and he'd come in. And one time Prabhupada just got so heavy, threw him out, and then he just ran away from the temple and he wandered the streets all night. He was wondering, should I commit suicide? This and that. And then Prabhupada noticed he wasn't there, and then he called him. "Where did you go? What? Why weren't you there at the program?" He said, I better not go to the program because Prabhupada's upset with me. And I said, "Where did he go?" And then he noticed that Prabhupada had noticed he was missing, and that melted his heart. So like that. No formulas, just... If we want to know how to do things, how to interact with devotees, one very good training in that is we can read Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita and see how Prabhupada dealt. Gives us a good idea. Lord Chaitanya descended to show how to perform devotional service. He preached in the middle part of his tenure. In his Antyalila, he stayed in Gambhira doing solitary bhajan. Should this be the standard for us? Yes, but maybe not in the same time schedule. Maybe we have to do Madhya Lila more and Antya Lila less. Prabhupada told Burijan Prabhu, I think it was, that you preach vigorously up till the age of 50, then you go and live in Vrindavan. He didn't tell him to stop preaching, but he told him to live in Vrindavan, which he's doing. He's preaching in Vrindavan. He also told Yamuna Devi that when you have to share everything that you've learned with others, otherwise the knowledge will cause you to become envious. And he said, when you're older, you can go and sit in Vrindavan. But he said, if you don't preach before going to sit in Vrindavan, then you won't be able to sit in Vrindavan. Your mind will not be peaceful. You won't be able to do bhajan nicely. So we can think like that. Yeah, we can think. Let us serve to the best of our ability in the preaching mission while our bodies are young and healthy, and then later we can retire. Or as Prabhupada said, I want the benediction from Krishna to fight up until the last breath, as did Arjuna. We'll see if we can do that. It's not so easy. When the body gets old, it becomes a strain to do anything, even to walk from one place to another. Shivram Maharaj told the story. They had some court case they wanted to close. The government wanted to close down Bhaktivedanta Manor. And they engaged one big lawyer in England, who's a famous lawyer, 70 years old or something. And they gave him Prabhupada Lilamrita to read so he gets some idea of what this movement is all about. And then he told the devotees that you don't know what it means that he came out in his old age to preach Krishna consciousness all over the world. And they thought, well, how can he say that you don't know? I mean, we should say to him that you don't know. He's not a devotee. How can he say that? He said to them, you don't know because you're not old. You don't know what it means to be old and then to undertake so much strain in old age. So, by Prabhupada's grace, we can retire in a holy place and follow the example of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, hearing and chanting. I would like to preach strongly and please Srila Prabhupada. I am not very advanced and it seems that Maya always tests me heavily after preaching strongly. What can I do? Well, you can quote, instead of directly, I don't know exactly what preaching strongly, what you understand by that, but instead you can just quote from Bhagavad Gita that Krishna says, for instance, those who do not surrender unto me, they are Dushkriti, they are Murha, Naradhama, Maya Aparita Jnana, or Asura. So we can preach, instead of making it that I am saying, you can just quote Krishna. So, Maya tests. Who is that Murha? Maybe it's me. We have to see. If Maya is testing us strongly, that's good. Then we have a chance to make more advancement. Isn't it? We receive the mercy of Mahaprabhu by Nityananda the Creeper. What is the mood in which we worship Gaur Gadadhar? Is Gadadhar Pandit's mood similar to Nityananda preaching mood? Gaur Gadadhar are worshipped by devotees who are inclined towards the Shringa or Madhurya Ras. And Gaur Nityananda are worshipped by devotees who are inclined towards the Sakya Bhav. So on a high level, there's that difference, is there, in worship. is Gadadhar Pandit's mood similar to Nityananda's preaching mood? No, not Gadadhar Pandit is not famous as a preacher. He was a Kshetra Sannyasi. Nityananda Prabhu is deputed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to preach. So there's difference in mood there. What is the meaning of Srila? Is it a spiritual address like His Holiness? Or is there any spiritual or dictionary meaning of it? Well, there are many. Sri, it means opulence. It's a general term addressed to anyone respected. And there are various forms of that. Sri, Srila, Sripad, Sriman, Srimat, Srimati, Sri Yukta, Sri Yukta, Sri Yut, Sri Yuta. They all, they're different forms of the word Sri. So Srila Prabhupada said is one means one who has seen the Leela of the Lord. It's also sometimes described La means Lasanti, which means Hiltirata. That means swinging. One who is swinging in the ecstasy of Krishna Leela. So this address, Srila, is generally given to highly respected devotees. Dictionary meaning. Haha, don't go for the dictionary meaning. Forget the dictionary. When we come to Krishna consciousness, the ordinary dictionary doesn't count. We have our own dictionary. Words are understood differently. That's why common people, they can read the scripture, they can't understand it. Literal meaning won't help. This Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, one pundit said to him once that when you send us your Gauriya magazine full of philosophical discussions, you please send me one, he told sarcastically, you please send me your own dictionary also so that I can understand what you're saying. Because you give all different meanings to the words than anyone else. This is discussed since ancient times. There's different rudhi or understanding of different words. There's vidvad rudhi is the understanding which of persons who understand. Sadharani Rudhi or Abhida Rudhi means the dictionary meaning. And Agya Rudhi is the understanding of fools. So dictionary meaning, we don't take. That's why Shastra has to be understood through devotees. The words of Shastra are not simply some words which can be analyzed etymologically and understood. This is Vaikuntha Varta, news from the spiritual world. So it's understood by residents of Vaikuntha, not by pundits of the material world. That's why also, just like we say that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and all our acharyas, they spoke Bengali. They didn't speak Bengali. That's Gauriya Bhasha. It's the language of devotees. So Bengal, everyone speaks Bengali, but our acharyas, that's not the language they're speaking. Devotees are wonderful. Yes. But as soon as the word but comes, it means we reject whatever we just said. Why do we find cheating propensity and envy prominent in our material dealings with each other? Well, material dealings means cheating propensity and envy. But there are no material dealings between devotees. because devotees are not on the material platform. So if we find cheating propensity and envy, that means that either we're on the material platform or someone somewhere is on the material platform. It may be that we're seeing something through our perverted vision, which is not there. Or it may be that we're dealing with persons who are not fully on the spiritual platform. That's why we're advised, even in associating with devotees, to choose our association carefully, to offer respects within the mind to everyone who is a devotee, but to associate particularly with those who are advanced devotees, and they may cheat us also. They may cheat us out of our cheating propensity to avoid Krishna. Just like Prabhupada used to say, we may consider it cheating. There is no difficulty in Krishna consciousness. And then rise early in the morning, fully surrender your life, and then so many apparent difficulties he would give. There are no difficulties. Then tapodivyam, then so many austerities have to be followed. Actually, there's nothing difficult, but we perceive it as difficult due to our perverted intelligence. So this is described in Krishna consciousness, favorable qualities, utsaha nischa dharyat, patience. This patience, Prabhupada gave the example, it's just like we have to wait, so don't expect everything very quickly, but patience also implies that we may not understand everything that's going on at our present level. It may take some time, so we should be patient. And things may appear to be wrong, but if we're patient, we may find that things are not as we perceive them. So patience also involves tolerance. One has to be very intelligent to serve Krishna. Jai Krishna Bhaje Shai Boro Chatur. One has to see beyond the superficial. Even we may find some apparent bad qualities in devotees, but then we may say, oh, I'll go away and go, what's the use? But then what's the alternative? We go to some place where people, at least they're trying to chant Hare Krishna. Even if they may not be on the perfect platform, may be frustrating to deal in some cases. We should try to find that association which will help us to advance. But again, that association that helps us to advance, that may not be palatable to our sense of mundane good dealings, or our mundane sense of good dealings, or our mundane sense of morality. So we have to be prepared for change of heart. And again, this patience that our understanding may develop in due course of time. Again, this I refer to this book I've been writing on Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Now, I've also found out and written so many things about many of his disciples. Now, if we examine the history of the Gauriya Math, especially after the departure of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, we'll find that there was a lot of fighting. And it makes ISKCON's internal problems look very mild, actually, in comparison to what the Gauriya Math went through. And from one viewpoint, we could say, well, this devotee did this and that devotee did that, and he was materialistic and he was fine. But then if I haven't included that, I've given an indication of it, but I haven't, because the actual important point of the life is how they served Krishna. That's the dynamic factor in their lives, and everything else may be considered external. At the time it may seem to be very important, but later on, when all the dust has settled and decades later, we can take inspiration from learning how they served Krishna. Rather, if we hear about they did this and they fought this, that, but that's all, whatever, the effect of that has all passed on, but that's all no longer apparent. But that they were engaged all their lives in Krishna's service, and many of them produced disciples who are also passing their lives in Krishna's service. That is glorious. That we should see, that we can become enlivened by. So again, this patience, if we see that, well, this person's trying to serve Krishna, but I have some difficulty with some of the things they're doing, and then maybe they have some difficulties with some of the things I'm doing. But the main thing is that they're all engaged in Krishna's service, so we offer them all respect. With this attitude, we can go on. Otherwise, we'll think, oh, what's the use? I'll go back to materialistic life, or I'll find some other Krishna-conscious society. But you go to some other Krishna-conscious society, and you'll find they'll have the same problems in different ways. One devotee I know, he was in ISKCON, and then he got initiated in Gauriya Math, and I met him. It's some years ago, and I met him, and we had a nice, friendly conversation, and he told me that actually all the problems you have in ISKCON, we have the same in our society. Same, but you don't hear about them because we are small and you're big. That's all. So you can't, even these Ritviks, they say, the solution is, have to have Prabhupada. As if there's no Prabhupada anywhere else. Prabhupada. They can't see Prabhupada anywhere, just inside their little blinkers. But they're also fighting among themselves. They also don't agree with each other. So, what's the solution? Hopping from one society here, there, or the other, that won't help us. We should find good association wherever we are and practice Krishna consciousness. Yeah, well, anyone want to ask a question about jazz kirtan? What is the root cause of lust and desire? Devotees with knowledge also seem trapped into this. Devotees with knowledge are also trapped by the... What is the root cause of lust and desire? This is a perversion of our natural propensity to love Krishna. This is a well-known... I mean, everyone who's in Krishna consciousness for more than 3 days should know this. But maybe you're asking because you're either the devotees in knowledge are also trapped. So maybe the person who's asking this is thinking, well, we say that the root cause is because of perversion of our love of Krishna, but we know this and we still have lust and envy, or was it lust and desire? So maybe we got the philosophy wrong. Because we know that it's lack of love of Krishna, and we say that, but still we have lust and material desire. So maybe the doubt is there that we got the wrong philosophy. Maybe it's because we're all one. Maybe that's the real answer. No, the root, even with knowledge, as long as one is not fully purified of material desire, then by the very definition it will continue to act. So what is this solution? To become perfect in Krishna consciousness. And in the meantime, the other propensities will continue to manifest. But if we concentrate on seeing the lower propensities, then we'll gravitate towards them. So it's better to glorify the... But while being careful not to become involved in the lower propensities, we should aim at the higher propensities. If we simply try to negate the lower propensities, then that's like the attempt of the Mayavadis. Rather, we should come to a higher platform. Raso vajam raso piyasya param drishtva nivartate. Is suffering necessary or a must for purification or advancement in spiritual life? Theoretically, no. Practically, yes. If we just surrender to Krishna, then everything perfect and very nice. But because we're materially attached, we find giving up those material attachments to be suffering. And as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur comments in his Brahma Sanghita commentary, that Krishna purifies the devotees in the fire of ordeal. By difficulty we become purified. If there's no difficulty, then we'll start to think that material life is very nice. So Krishna kindly reminds us how non-nice it is. It can be very painful. But at the end of the pain is the Brahma Sokyam to Anantam, unlimited spiritual bliss in Krishna consciousness. So we may be prepared to go through many difficulties. A lot depends on our attitude also, because if we're in Krishna consciousness, then we won't find it difficult, or we'll transcend the difficulty. All these questions, one thing, if we simply have the faith that if I try to serve Guru and Krishna very sincerely, they will help me, then all of these questions, then they're automatically answered. We'll go through. Aham tirishami durantaparam. I will be, by the grace of Mukunda, I will be able to cross over the ocean of ignorance. We should have that faith. What is more important spiritually, to come to Mayapur festival or to donate that much amount for temple construction? If one choice and not both, and why? Is it everyone wants everything? Is this your scientific upbringing? You want 1 + 1 = 2. But in spiritual life, it's not like that. We can't put you. This is the attempt of the scientists. They want to make one theory of everything, put the whole of reality into a mathematical formula. There's no such thing. Krishna is not under. It's not that x squared plus y squared times 2xy equals Krishna. There's no such formula. You won't. There's no such thing. There is one formula that 16 plus 4 equals BTG. 16 rounds and 4 regulated principles and go back to Godhead. Prabhupada said that. Prabhupada said that. If you just chant 16 rounds and follow these principles, you'll go back to Godhead. So Dhanavir Maharaj pointed this out. But as for putting it should we do one? If you have the choice between doing the two, donating for temple construction or going to Mayapur festival, go to Mayapur festival. Then you get more enlivened and you can get more money and give it for temple construction or whatever. That's, as you asked my opinion, I gave it. The one who's trying to get the funds for you for temple construction, they'll probably give a different opinion. But as you asked me, I gave you my answer. Respected Maharaji, what are the consequences of hiding weaknesses from the spiritual master and further telling him lies? Oh, that's very bad. You shouldn't tell lies. One of our God brothers here, who's I won't tell the whole story because then you'll know who he is, but he told a little lie once to Prabhupada. And in the class the next morning, Prabhupada was just talking philosophy normally. Then he looked right at that devotee and shouted, "You should never tell lies to your spiritual master." So he told. What are the consequences? Well, you want me to say, and then you'll think that, well, is it worth doing it or not? If you jump the red light, you get $100 fine. Shall I risk it or not? What are the chances of getting caught? Okay, let's go through it. So if you tell a lie, what are the consequences? Shall I do it? Okay, I think, yeah, okay, let's jump the red light. But tell a lie, and can I get away with it? We shouldn't even think like that. The devotees ask, how can we get free from offenses? I mean, that shouldn't be the question. You just don't make offenses. Instead of thinking I'll make some offense and then how can I get free from it? Just don't do it, it's better. Ratan Das Thakur Moshoy says, Sri Guru Charani Roti, but it's said that we should develop Guru Prem, which seems natural and logical. So which context does Srila Narottam Thakur use the term roti? Is it the same? Roti means deep emotional attachment, which is the foundation of prem. There's no prem without roti is a basic constituent of prem. We have so many things here in kirtans, like Radhe, Radhe, Jai this and that. What can we do? I heard that Srila Prabhupada didn't protest where devotees would chant Jai Gaur Nitai Hari Bol at the end of the kirtan. Well, Prabhupada did give guidelines on kirtan. And he didn't always, it wasn't that he was always stopping everyone when they sung different things which he didn't like. Maybe I wouldn't say didn't like, but he recommended the, especially emphasizing on chanting of Hare Krishna. And he didn't want so many different things to be introduced, other things. Of course, bona fide kirtans by bona fide acharyas, that's one thing, but then now we hear things like Jai Parampara, which it doesn't really mean anything. It's not Naam Kirtan. Parampara could also mean a parampara of, there are so many bogus paramparas. Even Jai Panchatattva, it's not Naam Kirtan actually. But what can we do? It's one great strength of ISKCON. We're talking about the Gauriya Math and they split up into so many different brands. They're going on splitting. It's a principle, practically, that they split more and more because after each acharya of every math passes, then they break up into more different groups. So it's one strength of ISKCON is that we're more or less all together, but at the same time it's, if there's one acharya then it's easier to say this is the line, but then when there are many different leaders, there are many different opinions and it's difficult to come to any one point, which is maybe one reason why the Ritvikvadis are pushing Prabhupada. We should actually follow what Prabhupada says, but sometimes it's difficult to institute that, and it's, there may be different opinions about what Prabhupada said also. So we, that's a whole job of what is called hermeneutics, which means how to interpret, how to understand the directions of Shastra and that of the Acharyas. Actually, we don't have to invent any system for interpretation. It's already there. The whole Vedic philosophy is already there. The system within Mimamsa of understanding Shastra is already there. It's been there for thousands of years. How are we to understand Shastra? What are the rules for doing so? And in relationship to the utterances of our Acharyas. In many cases, actually, the utterance of an Acharya may override Shastraviti. It depends, but we have to see under which... But that doesn't make it an eternal principle. Shastraviti is the eternal principle. If an Acharya says something, that may temporarily or in some circumstance override Shastraviti, but it doesn't, it's not an eternal principle. So all these things have to be understood very intelligently by persons who are learned and in the mode of goodness, and who understand the whole, all these principles. So, anything else? Otherwise, what time is this seminar supposed to finish? What's the time? 6:25. So, should we finish now? There's so many questions coming up. Oh, well, they're put in English? Okay. So, shall we go on more? Is there anyone else coming? Or you want to go on more or what?
Come on, go on.
There's my question. To this question, you gave the answer. You had so many questions, what happened to all of them? What I'm thinking is, after this, after the 4 days of this are over, if there are more questions pending, you can write them and give them to me, and in due course of time I'll speak them. And then if you're that enthusiastic, you can get the CD later. Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay. Is Diksha, initiation, completely necessary to get rid of anarthas? By this you mean brahminical initiation? Or you mean initiation? Is there any possibility to purify our heart and advance in Krishna consciousness without initiation? Supposing he's doing all the other angas of devotional service, taking sadhu, sangha and shiksha guidance. If yes, in what degree? Well, this is a big discussion. We understood first of all what Diksha means. Divyam Gyanam Yato Dadyat Purva Papasya Sankshayam. Diksha means the process by which spiritual knowledge is received or it's given, and by which the sinful effects are completely nullified. So, is it, you do all the other angas of devotional service, but then we find that Rupa Goswami says, Ado Gur Vashaya Krishna Diksha Anushikshanam. At the beginning that comes, Diksha. So the others are supposed to follow after that. So one can become purified up to a certain level, but the connection is required there to actually execute these all these other angas fully. One has to accept Diksha. Diksha kale bhakta kare atta samarpan. Diksha means to surrender. One has to do that through a representative of Krishna, If one says, I will go directly to Krishna, Krishna will not accept that. So, is it required to take diksha? Yes, it is. This is a, as I say, it's a big question. It may be possible in some cases that some devotees are very advanced and their diksha doesn't take a, it's not a formal diksha, we can say. But the example that's been, that means that the Divya Gyanam is imparted without any formal ceremony. But we see that the example was given by Krishna, by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of formally taking diksha, although they certainly had no need to do so. But to set the example for almost everyone else, they did so. Sometimes people postulate that, well, if you get spiritual knowledge, that's the initiation. I can read Prabhupada's books on getting the knowledge, and that is the initiation. But rather, initiation is the process by which that spiritual knowledge is revealed. It's not round the other way. In ISKCON terminology, we find the terms good spiritual standing, bad spiritual standing. What is the meaning of this? Well, as it's ISKCON terminology, it may not be very precisely defined. As it's ISKCON terminology, it's not Shastric terminology. Good spiritual standing. Well, well, often we hear good standing, we don't hear good spiritual standing. Good standing within ISKCON generally means to be accepted by the society, doesn't it? It seems to be more of an, you write a letter that to whom it may concern, so-and-so das is a devotee in good standing. That means they're accepted by the society, that they're known to be following, and they're accepted within the society. They're an accepted member of the society. Good spiritual standing means that we should be following the process of Krishna consciousness. That's good standing. Not in good standing means some bad reputation is there. Can someone who's not regularly rise early and attend Mangalati and does not try to chant attentively his rounds and does not read regularly Prabhupada's books, claim he is in good spiritual standing or even pass in as an advanced devotee? Well, the answer is in the question. You're more or less given the answer within the question. It's just waiting for a no to come. There is a following statement. Actually, Krishna does not know when the conditioned soul will come back to him. This is because the jiva always has her independent will. So although Krishna is omnipotent, he does not know, somehow out of his mercy, out of his love, he makes himself not knowing the particular thing, when will the jiva exercise her only choice. Is such a statement bona fide or not? Yeah, we can say that. Krishna knows everything, but at the same time, he doesn't know when the jiva will surrender. Knows and doesn't know. Both things are true. You understand that? No. Again, there's no, you can't put Krishna in a formula. Either Jiva Goswami or Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, I can't remember, has stated that Krishna, while executing his Vrindavan Leela, is simultaneously fully aware that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and at the same time fully unaware and thinks that I am the son of Mother Yashoda. That statement is given without further explanation. It's not explainable. That is the godliness. That's what it means to be God. So yes, Krishna knows, and he doesn't know also. If he knew, there'd be no fun in welcoming us back. Then just in Brihad Bhagavatam, it's described, devotees going to the spiritual world and Krishna faints in ecstasy. So they won't be to see, my devotee has come back after such a long time. There won't be any ecstasy if he knows.
Oh yeah. Oh, he's coming in 3 minutes' time. Oh. Okay. Oh.
No, Krishna faints in ecstasy because he doesn't know. What should be the proper application of the Vanaprastha ashram for the general Grihastha in ISKCON and that of Sannyas ashram for old brahmacharis who are not effective preachers? How practically? Sannyas in ISKCON is mostly accepted for preaching. So if one is not preaching, there's no real need to accept sannyas. One can live, this seems to be a mixed up question here. One can live as a brahmachari. Many old brahmacharis, they just remain called brahmachari up to the last days. And in India at least, if someone is an older brahmachari, he's respected as much as a sannyasi. He's been a brahmachari all his life. For general grihastha, vanaprastha, yeah, nowadays vanaprastha means that they got divorced or something and then they become a vanaprastha. That's not the meaning of vanaprastha. Generally, well, we have here some, is that you would consider yourself a vanaprastha like that? You're retired?
Not yet.
Sorry. Almost. Is it? And yourself also just a few more years? You're practically starting to live like that anyway, isn't it? Your son has left home and you're just, you have a few more years to work and you spend whatever time you have, you go to the temple and then you go to visit different holy places. So that description is there. When you get older, you go with your wife and visit different holy places and engage in spiritual life, that's all. Natural progression. If you want to discuss this more, you can discuss with Jnanananda Prabhu, who's in Vrindavan now. He was here a few days ago. He examined all the quotes of Prabhupada. He made a little leaflet about that. You could ask him about that. He must still have it. He could send it to you. What is the difference between a Dharma Dwaji and Kali Chela? Well, maybe not much. Dharma Dwaji is a particular type of Kali Chela. Kali Chela means disciple of Kali Yuga or disciple of Kali Maharaj, who is the presiding personality of Kali Yuga. And there may be various forms of Kali Chela. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has pointed out, what is that? Galai Mala, Nakai Tilak, Galai Mala, Tumi Ek Kali Chela, something like that. They're dressed with Kanti Mala and Tilak, but actually they're disciple of Kali. But Dharma Dwaji means a hypocrite, actually. Someone who makes a show means he has a dvaj, he has a flag, he's waving. I'm very religious, but he's using his supposed religiosity for cheating others, making a show of religion to take advantage of people's religious sentiment to cheat others. So, there is a saying, not even a straw can move without the sanction of the Lord. Some devotee managers use this statement for justifying their mistakes and mismanagement. Is it bona fide? No. Prabhupada specifically said about that, that if you make a mistake, that's your nonsense. You don't blame it on Krishna. Nothing happens without the will of the Lord means Krishna gives you room to work in. That doesn't mean that you go to court and you are charged with murder. And did you shoot such and such a person? Yes, I did, and it's all the will of the Lord. It's all It's all direct. Not a straw moves without his sanction. It's all. That won't be accepted in a court of law. If you say everything I do wrong is all Krishna's doing, and everything I do right, it's all my doing. It's not accepted. We are responsible. Upadrashtanumanta cha. He sees everything and he gives allowance for things to be done. Actually, this exact statement, not a straw moves without the will of the Lord, that's an English saying. It's not a Sanskrit saying. He wants that everything that goes on, he wants it to go on, but he allows. Anumanta means he allows, he gives the facility. That doesn't mean he wants us to do all our nonsense. Some devotees buy cooked things from Dhammavasis who are not chanting regularly and following four rules, not offering unto the Lord, are not clean and eating it. They claim it is all Dharma Prasad. You can claim like that, but even if we think that the Dhammavasis, they're completely pure, but it would appear that in their consciousness there is at least what we could call a covering of calm, crowed, lobe, etc. So that will affect them. That is not as pleasing to... If out of our desire to enjoy nice foods, in the name of prasadam, we take different food and say that it's all prasad, then it's not prasad. It's not prasad. Prasad means the Lord's mercy, that we accept it as the Lord's mercy. If we're taking it as something for our sense gratification, then to us it's just like the deity is Krishna. But if we see him as stone, then for us the deity is stone. Krishna reciprocates according to our mentality. So if we think this is something for our sense gratification, then it's not prasad. We don't get the mercy. We get the sense gratification. We shouldn't think Krishna consciousness is mechanical. It all depends on our intention. Krishna will reciprocate with that. I heard the Dhammavasis are not usual people. We should avoid judging them. There are 10 offenses against the Dham. I've heard that the Dhammavasis are not judged by Yamaraj after death, but by Lord Shiva. I hadn't heard that. It may be. But we have to see who is an actual Dhammavasi. One who has placed his body in the Dham, or one whose consciousness is one of service to Krishna. Narottam Das Thakur lived at Kheturi, his hometown. He didn't live in Vrindavan, but he always lived in Vrindavan. Bhaktivinoda Thakur lived in Calcutta. Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj would call, "You come and live with me. Don't live in that place of Kali, Calcutta. Come and live with me in Navadvip Dham." And Bhaktivinoda Thakur would send back a message that where I live is not the material world. By their consciousness they live in the spiritual world. Whereas someone may be living in Vrindavan superficially, but by their consciousness they're in hell. And that we see. I'm informed by one devotee who's lived in Vrindavan for many years, godbrother from America, that persons who are born in Vrindavan, many of them it's well known. There's how many murder cases a day in Mathura district? There's an average of 10 or 12 murders every day. There are so many bad things going on. So this is not Krishna consciousness. We may respect, but we shouldn't think that it's the same as we'll get the same purification as by associating with devotees who are seriously practicing Krishna consciousness. What is the difference between kirtan and bhajan? Kirtan means glorification of the Lord, and bhajan means Well, as Prabhupada described, there's no real English word for it. He translated it as to worship, but he said there's no proper So bhajan is a broader term. Bhajan means the activities or the cultivation of Krishna consciousness, particularly by devotees who are on an advanced level. That is called bhajan. And sometimes bhajan is also refers to the different songs we sing. In ISKCON we usually say kirtan means standing up and singing, and bhajan means sitting down and singing some songs. But that may be in Hindi, I don't know. In Hindi they say like that, bhajan means sitting. No, they also call kirtan, isn't it? Somehow that's come in ISKCON, that we think that bhajan means sitting down and singing, and kirtan means standing up. But in traditional Indian languages, singing the names of the Lord, that's called Naam Kirtan. And that may also be called bhajan. I've heard that in Bhakti Shastri that Bible, Quran and other scriptures are distorted parts of Vedic literature. They are angas of Vedic literature. Well, in a very... They originated from the Vedas. Is it true? In a very broad sense, you could say so. Only in a very broad sense, we could say that the Bible and the Quran are Vedic literature. Inasmuch, whatever truth is there, that can be... But the thing is that Veda means Praman. And Bible and Quran, it's not Praman. It's accepted as Praman by people who do not know Veda Praman. So it's not on the same level. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in discussing with Chand Kazi agreed, said there are so many mistakes in the Quran. It's adhunik. It's modern. Whereas the Veda Shastra is eternal. And Bible, if we see the history, it's... The New Testament was written long after Jesus left this world by people who never saw him in a language he didn't speak. And then what's accepted as the Bible and what isn't has been very arbitrarily accepted. And there are so many faults in that. So to say that it's on... And we can say in a very broad way that it's Vedic literature, but generally we don't say. It's Veda means that's defined. There's four Vedas, Upavedas, Puranas, Itihas, but not Bible and Quran. Then we should distribute Bible and Quran, but we're not doing that. We have something. So we could, like I said, we can say in a very broad sense, but that should be qualified to understand that if we don't, otherwise, what are we doing here? Then we should go and become Christians or something. So if your Bhakti Shastri teachers tell you that they're also Veda, you should ask them to qualify that. Because that's only in a very tangential sense we can say that the Bible and the Quran are also... And do they originate from the Vedas? No. Not... That would be... only in a very... In a very abstract way, you could say the Vedas have, the Bible and Quran have originated from the Vedas, but Veda Narayana Sakshat, Vedas come directly from Narayana, right? Whereas the Bible and the Quran are full of written by people who are not in full knowledge, and then edited and distorted more by people in even less knowledge. So there are so many imperfections. So if anyone says anything which doesn't sound right, you can ask. What is this? Can you explain that? Does that mean if you're saying Bible and Quran are part of the Vedas, that means it's as authoritative? By no means. No way. Definitely not. You can ask your teachers to, if they're going to make such statements, to qualify it fully so that we understand why we're studying Prabhupada's books and not the Bible and the Quran. Otherwise people think it's all the same. And then what's the use of doing a Bhakti Shastri course? If that's, I don't know what they teach exactly, but if that's what if that's the impression that's coming over, maybe you should ask them to make it more clear. Even Prabhupada might say something like that sometimes in preaching to someone, but you have to see the overall picture. What do we have to say? What are the overall teachings about this? Is the desire to get free from material existence, go back home, back to Godhead, spiritual desire? Should we cultivate this desire? Yes, it's spiritual desire. The desire to go back to Godhead is spiritual. Should we cultivate this desire? Yes. And then you're like, then what about Mama Janmani, Janmani? That's also a spiritual desire. That's more developed. But the desire to get out of material existence can be material if it's only that I will get free from suffering. But the desire to get out of material existence to go back to Godhead to serve Krishna, that is spiritual. Who is Bhakti Devi? Good question. I've been asking that for years. We're told this is a manifestation of Radharani, but I don't find what is her form as a gopi or any such thing. Who is Gayatri Devi? Well, original Gayatri is she's again a Shakti of the Lord in the spiritual world. She's a Vraja Gopi who manifests, it's a very deep topic, she manifests as the sound of Krishna's flute which appears within the heart of the devotee and illuminates with spiritual knowledge. Okay, some Russian. We have some Russian questions. Yeah, please. Should we put some time limit on this? What's the time now?
5 minutes to 7.
So we'll put a time limit, 7:15 maybe? Yeah, please.
Sometimes I feel disturbed when some devotees nearby chant the japa too much louder. What is the cause of my disturbance?
You feel disturbed when some devotees who are neophytes chant too loudly. But if they're advanced devotees and they chant loudly, then you don't feel disturbed? Nearby. Oh, okay. Nearby devotees. Well, I feel I can't hear my round. I can't hear chanting if there are people chanting next to me so loud. Then I think I might as well, you know, just not chant and I can hear their japa. I can just move the beads as they chant. Let them do the chanting for me. I don't have a very strong voice, so I usually chant away from other devotees because I can't hear properly actually. So it may be a personal thing. But Prabhupada also said, I think it was Navayogendra Maharaj told once he was chanting very loudly outside Prabhupada's room, thinking Prabhupada would be very pleased that I'm chanting so loudly. And Prabhupada sent a message, don't chant so, no, I can't remember who it was, maybe it wasn't Navayogendra. Prabhupada sent a message, you shouldn't chant so loud to disturb your spiritual master. He also has to concentrate on writing his books. Then, another question? Yeah.
You're right.
You can keep this for tomorrow. Yeah. Yeah, there are no more questions there? You don't have more questions, or you're sorting it out? In the meantime, we can go on with something here. Some of the devotees outside look very good, but personally they are completely different. Then how to associate ourselves with them and how to digest that person nature as a devotee? Is this your question? I don't understand what this question means. I'm sorry, I don't understand. Anyone like to give some clarification? Some of the devotees outside look good, but personally they are completely different. I'm sorry. Maybe whoever wrote this could try and clarify their thoughts and put them in a manner that I get understanding. While serving devotees, there's another question I also don't understand. While serving devotees are telling rice prasad and so on, so is it necessary to add prasad? Don't understand. I need an... Maybe you need someone to write to translate the question if your English isn't so good. Who? Who wrote the Tulsi Arti song that we sing in the morning, Arti? Is it by Narottam Das Thakur? It doesn't seem to be. Because he says, Dina Krishna Dasaka. What is that? So it's by a Krishna Das. There are many Krishna Dasas. It may be someone whose name wasn't Krishna Das, but they just as a general. I don't know, and I don't know if it's known either. There are many of our Gauriya Kirtans, the writers are not known because they haven't put their names. Even this song, we sing this Jai Radhe Jai Krishna, Dino Krishna Dasa Kahi Nama Sankirtan. It's in our song, but it's put as Krishna as Kaviraj. But I don't think he wrote this actually. Maybe someone else. Who is Vrinda Devi in something Leela? Gaur Leela. Anyone want to look that up? If it's there in Gaur Ganodesh Deepika, I don't remember offhand. Anyone like to look that up? It's not in Gaur Ganodesh Deepika. Then either... Ah, I know who she is. She's Tulsi Devi. Tulsi is there in Gaur Leela, right? She's serving in this. She's serving as Tulsi. Same form. Right? All right, that seems it's all over for now. There's no more questions now, so we'll finish there.